Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, if you're thinking about having a baby or pregnant or are a new mother, then it'd probably be a good idea to listen to today's Line One. If you know someone who is thinking about getting pregnant, is pregnant, or just had a baby, then you also would be well served to stay tuned for the next hour. Joining us today from her Pennsylvania office is maternal mental health expert Karen Kleiman for a discussion about postpartum depression and maternal mental health in general. It's an estimated that one in seven new mothers in the U.S. are impacted by some mental health problem related to their pregnancy. Despite these numbers, many are not identified and too often suffer in silence. Symptoms of crippling depression and anxiety, scary thoughts of bad things happening to our babies, and not knowing where to turn or who to talk to often leave mothers feeling alone and isolated. Well, Karen Kleiman is a licensed clinical social worker who's well known as an international expert on postpartum depression and anxiety. In 1988, Karen founded the Postpartum Stress Center, treating and training facility for prenatal and postpartum depression and anxiety disorders. Some of her national television appearances include Katie Couric's show, Inside Edition, Oprah Winfrey, and NBC Nightly News. In addition to her clinical work at the Postpartum Stress Center, she frequently publishes in many national magazines and authored or co-authored several books on the subject of postpartum depression. Thanks for joining us, Karen. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, Prentice. You did such a good job there. I feel like you've covered everything already.
And that's it. We can wrap it up. I need to remind listeners, this is a call-in show. We can be reached in one of three ways. You can reach us locally at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us on our toll-free number, and that's 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. All right, Karen. We were talking beforehand. It's been almost 4 years, over 3.5 years since we talked. It doesn't seem it seems like it's gone by really quickly.
It does, and you know what? One of the things that we were saying is that we're sort of talking about the same thing today, which is great news. Great news. At the same time, you know, it raises the question of how far have we come, and I can assure you that 30 years ago when I started knocking on doors, I was saying pretty much the same things we're saying today. So, you know, in many ways, we're asking the same questions and we're worried about the same thing. But at the same time, that being said, you know, public awareness is increasing and legislation is happening and advocacy is all over the place. So we are finally talking about postpartum depression.
It's moving into the more our consciousness or more into the conversation, the daily conversation?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I hate to give social media too much credit for this, but I do think that it's providing a platform for not only professionals and professional advocates, but for moms who are experiencing it to have this collective voice, this outcry of, this is no longer okay, this is not okay. And, you know, they're finding a way to get this message out, and they're getting more informed, and they're talking about it. Because despite the increase in awareness, mothers are still not telling us how bad they feel, and healthcare providers are still not asking the same questions, asking the right questions. And so women continue to suffer terribly, and women continue to die. And every time there's a tragedy, we say, what are we missing here? What are we missing? Why are women not seeking help? Why are they not following through? Why are healthcare providers letting them fall through the cracks? So there's responsibility on both sides. But when women are that sick, they can't always advocate for themselves. So we want to empower the families and educate the healthcare providers and so forth. So we stop missing it.
All right. Well, we're going to get into that a little bit later on why we're missing it, what we can do. But let's start out with just really kind of quickly talk about what postpartum depression and anxiety is, maternal mental health, some of those terms that we're using. Is it after birth or this stuff happens before?
So the terms are evolving. Yeah. And for those of us who have been doing this for, you know, 150 years, it's like it's changing. And I'm trying to stay relevant here. You know, when I started doing this work, everything was postpartum depression. It was an umbrella term for anything and everything after, you know, that you're feeling after you have a baby. And there's a whole spectrum, as you know, which we can talk about. But there's the blues, and there's an adjustment disorder, and there's mild depression, moderate depression, severe depression, there's psychosis, and there's anxiety in between all of that, significant clinical anxiety. So now we've moved from postpartum depression and anxiety. We talk now about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Perinatal refers to before and after birth, so pregnancy is a big part of the conversation now. We used to think that mental health issues were, emerged during the postpartum period, but now we know that a large percentage of them, almost half, can start during pregnancy. So perinatal means during pregnancy and postpartum. And maternal mental health is a term that is used to describe all of that, during pregnancy, postpartum, motherhood. Okay?
Right. So obviously it's short-sighted to think that somebody has a baby and then all these issues come flooding to the forefront. I mean, it's very complex and multi-layered, and it's not as easy as saying, like, you give birth, watch out for this.
Well, it's not, but it is sometimes we do say that, you know. We do say that for every woman is at risk. I mean, when we do trainings and we talk about the risk factors for any kind of maternal mental health issue, we've got like 4 slides of risk factors. And basically, if you're a woman and you're giving birth, you're at risk.
That's one of them.
That's right. And if you have a history of any kind of mood or anxiety disorder, any depression, any anxiety, bipolar illness, you are at an increased risk. So we do actually say, at least in my practice, if you're going to have a baby, watch out for this, 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 and this. And there are some things that we know can protect a mom. You know, we want to make sure she's sleeping. We want to make sure her support system is strong. We want to make sure her marriage is, you know, as satisfactory as possible, and that people are on board. If she's really vulnerable, then we sort of dig in further with the support. We can't always prevent a depression or anxiety from occurring, but we can try and fortify her resources to reduce the impact.
So real quick, what are those risk factors if someone is considering having a baby or is pregnant? What kind of things should they be aware of as far as things that put them at risk?
Any history of depression or anxiety themselves or actually in their family. And, you know, we laugh. You know, I say, is there any history of depression or anxiety in your family? And they'll say, you know, nothing that's been diagnosed, but of course.
Right.
So if we know that there's been a diagnosis of depression or anxiety, that's a clear risk factor. And to be honest, you know, most people do have people in their families who've been depressed or anxious. So specifically a previous postpartum depression or anxiety disorder will put her at risk. Any medical complications for mom or baby is going to make her more vulnerable. Her relationship issues will make her more vulnerable, lack of support, some of the things that we just talked about. Any other external stressor is going to put her at risk, unplanned pregnancy, things like that. And you know, fathers are much more involved now. Partners are much more involved now. So we try to get, if we have a mother at our practice who's at risk, we try and have her partner come in during the pregnancy so we can educate the family and help them know what to look for. And we want moms to be empowered with this information. We have lists and lists on our website, for example. Fill this out and take it to your healthcare provider. You know, let them know that you've just completed this form and you've checked off 7 out of the 30 risk factors. They need to know that and put that in your medical file. Because if doctors don't ask the right questions, if they don't know that this one woman's mother, had a bipolar illness and this woman lost her first baby, and if they don't have this information, then and they're just treating her for her current, you know, state, they don't always know, and they're often surprised to see how badly and how quickly moms can feel bad.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. We are discussing perinatal mental health, also like previously known as postpartum depression. I guess it's still a term. They're all sort of evolving, as Karen pointed out. Our guest is Karen Kleiman, international expert on postpartum and perinatal mental health. You can reach us at 550-8433. Or toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. You can email any questions or comments you might have for Karen to line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Karen, how is this different than, I mean, having a baby is a huge adjustment disorder. I've had three, and I haven't had three. My family's had three babies, and it comes with a lot of sleepless nights and stress and arguing. And like, what makes... Mm-hmm. What makes it normal versus something that people really need to be concerned about?
Well, a good question. The disorder part, when you say adjustment disorder, is different than what we would call, you know, quote, normal postpartum adjustment. And yes, it always comes with sleeplessness and anxiety and worry and so forth. The easiest way to differentiate is, you know, how long is it lasting and how bad does it feel? For example, let's talk first on the beginning of the spectrum. We talk about baby blues. And this affects 80 to 85% of new moms, so we pretty much say almost all. And the important distinguishing factor, everybody hears about the baby blues. You know, it's sort of normal emotional lability and some weepiness and crying and being overwhelmed and certainly being fatigued and weary. But this is time limited. It's transient. It does not need any treatment, and it gets better on its own. And we're talking about 2 to 3 weeks postpartum. Anything beyond 2 to 3 weeks, literally anything beyond 2 to 3 weeks, is not the baby blues. And I repeat that because healthcare providers are misinformed, and they will tell a 4-month postpartum woman who's tired and weepy and overwhelmed and exhausted that she has the blues, and she doesn't. And so if you're feeling like you have the blues and you're not sure what's going on and it's beyond the 2 to 3 marker period, it's no longer the blues. Now, what is that? We're not sure, but it could be moving into what you've called the adjustment disorder phase. This is, quote, normal, but it's also, we coined the term, in This Isn't What I Expected, Valerie Raskin and I called it postpartum stress syndrome, where now it takes on a new layer of, why did I have this baby, and who am I, and I've lost my identity, and I've lost myself, and I haven't slept in 4 weeks, and I haven't taken a shower in 6 days, and I don't know why I decided to do this, and I haven't spoken to my husband in weeks, and right? And so it's taken on a new level of stress, and it starts to possibly slowly interfere with her ability to get through the day. And when it actually interferes with her functioning, then it's moved into a depression. Okay? And so the quick answer to how do I know if what I'm feeling is normal or not is how much distress it's causing. How much is distress? For instance, all new moms cry.
Right.
All new moms are tired. All new moms are weepy. But if I'm crying so much that I'm crying all day and every day, and I've been crying for 6 days straight, that's too much crying. So we call it, we say the duration, frequency, and intensity. It's not the symptom per se. It's how long have you been doing it? How bad is it happening? You know, how bad does it feel, and how much is it interfering with your ability to get through the day? And it's very subjective, Prentice. It's very subjective,
right.
And that's why it's so hard. You know, you go to the regular, you go to a healthcare, you go to your general practitioner, and you say, I've got a sore throat, and I've got a fever, and it hurts when I swallow, my glands are swollen. We've got a set of symptoms that we can identify. When a woman has postpartum depression, she goes to her doctor, and she says, I think my baby would be better off without me. We don't know how to operationalize that, you know? We don't know how to measure that. We don't know what to do with that. So some doctors are scared to ask these questions because they don't know what it means. They haven't been trained to, you know, make a psychiatric diagnosis.
So is perinatal mental health an integrated part of like prenatal and postnatal care plans? I mean, what you're talking about is doctors who have women there regularly for checkups, and you say that you mentioned they're not asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they missing it?
Gosh, that's such a good question. Could you ask some of the doctors that directly? Why are they missing it? The same reason why they're asking, why they're telling a four-month postpartum woman that she's got the blues. I don't know why they're missing it. Part of the reason they're missing it is because of the stigma, because it's so hard to talk about it, because we live in a society that doesn't make it easy for moms to admit that they don't feel like being a mother or they're not enjoying their motherhood. Women are extraordinarily good at looking good and saying they're fine. And they do not want anybody, they don't want their partner, their mother, their doctor to know that they are suffering. It just doesn't go with being a mother. Isn't this the best thing you've ever done? No. isn't this the happiest time of your life? No. But you don't want to say that. So you go to your doctor, you get dressed, you put your lipstick on, you look good. He says, he or she says, how are you doing? She says, fine. She goes home, and she wants to kill herself. And I don't mean to be flip about it, but we aren't creating the environment. We aren't sitting with her, looking her in the eyes, and saying, do you know about postpartum depression? It affects one out of every seven women. Is there anything you want to tell me about how you're feeling or what you're thinking? You know what I mean?
I do. Absolutely.
And they're saying, if I can interrupt, I'm sorry, but they're saying, the research is showing that women want to be asked these questions. They want to talk about the possibility for postpartum depression. They're terrified. And when doctors identify it by name, when doctors, you know, engage in this sort of collaborative care, you know, postpartum depression and anxiety is real. Is there anything you want to tell me? Are you having any thoughts that are scaring you? That tells the mom that she's in a safe place where she might be able to say, yeah, actually, I am having some thoughts that are scaring me. Can I tell you about them? But the problem is not every healthcare provider is trained to know what questions to ask and to know what to do when they get the answers. That's the other big piece.
And are folks uncomfortable with that conversation? It's like asking somebody about domestic violence or asking about addiction. Like, you just kind of want to they're not going to bring it up, I'm not going to ask.
Right. That's right. And like I said, the pretense, the facade to look good and in control as a mother who's never felt so out of control in her life. She spends an extraordinary amount of energy making sure she looks good, and she doesn't want to tap into that either unless she knows for sure that she's in a safe place. And how do you ever know? How do you really know? You could like your doctor a lot and not know at all what they're going to do. There have been some fairly high-profile cases where women have taken the risk to say, I'm having these really scary thoughts about hurting my baby, and then they end up, you know, at the police station, or the baby gets taken away, and you know that's another whole topic.
It is, and perhaps we'll get to that in just a second. I do want to. Natasha's been on hold for a while here, so I want to get her on. You're on line one, Natasha, with Karen Kleiman. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that you've answered so many questions for me while I was just on hold. I had my son 6 years ago, and I felt like I kind of got lost in the system because I was I had an unplanned C-section, and so I didn't get follow-up appointments with my regular care provider. And I felt I had a lot of those feelings that you mentioned, and nobody asking me those questions, and I felt like I had no one to talk to. So my question is, how do you, as a new mom, what resources do we have, or how can you recommend getting those questions asked when your doctor isn't asking them?
Yeah, great question. And I will tell you, Natasha, that is actually the current push. You know, as complicated as this may sound to many doctors in terms of how do we start asking the questions and what do we do with the information, some of us say it's actually pretty simple. If you give every single pregnant and postpartum woman coming into your office a list of local resources. Like, don't wait for her to tell you she feels bad, you know? Just like you're giving her a prescription, just give her a list of local resources. That being said, those local resources need to be good ones, reputable, and hopefully specialized training in this area. For moms, you know, to get that information themselves, I mean, I know some women who have, after they've gotten better, they've put together this list, they've interviewed people, and they've taken it back to their doctor and said, here, you know, give this to every single pregnant and postpartum woman so that she knows where to go. Because if you just go on the Internet, you can just get lost in the shuffle. You know how that goes.
And I didn't realize that what I was feeling was totally normal. I had no idea that I had the blues, is what you were calling it, because I just didn't have anyone to talk to about it. I felt like I didn't. Maybe I did, and I just didn't realize it.
Right. And, well, and the other thing you bring up is that, you know, we are now starting to recognize that maybe the six-week post, you know, post-baby checkup is too long to wait. 6 weeks is too long to feel bad and not know what you're feeling and not know if it's okay. And some doctors are talking about, you know, bumping that up to four or three weeks postpartum so moms can get in, or at least with a follow-up phone call, because they can be sitting there like you for a long time and not know if it's okay or not, you know?
All right, that's a great question, Natasha. Thanks so much for calling
Natasha.
In. I want to remind folks, my guest today is author, speaker, and therapist Karen Kleiman. Karen's one of the world's leading experts on maternal mental health and has authored or co-authored 11 books on the subject. We come back after this short break. We'll get into the shame and stigma associated with postpartum depression, talk about the Speak the Secret campaign, and have Karen discuss a few of her books. And to answer the last caller, why education is the best prevention. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is one of the leading experts in the world on maternal mental health, Karen Kleiman. Karen has authored or co-authored 11 books on the subject and has appeared as a guest on many national news and talk programs. Listener questions and comments are welcome today. Our local phone number is 550-8433. You can call us toll free from anywhere you might be listening at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get on the air is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. Right before the break, I mentioned Speak the Secret campaign. I'd like, that's something you were kind of chomping at the bit to talk about. And I think you have alluded to it. So what is that?
Yeah, so it sort of evolved organically when, you know, sort of on one of our team meetings, we were talking about this very subject of having scary thoughts after you have a baby. Having scary thoughts is sort of a term that we use to identify the very common phenomenon of having negative, intrusive thoughts after you have the baby, of harm coming to the baby. And there's an incredible spectrum of these thoughts. They can just be sort of normal, worrisome, like, ooh, I just took the baby out of a bath, what if I drop him, to just horrific, violent, graphic thoughts about harm coming to the baby. They're so terrifying that mothers, understandably, don't let anybody know that they're having these thoughts. They think they're going mad. They think they're not a good mother. They think that something, you know, that they're totally out of control, and that worse comes to worse, they're going to hurt their baby. And what we've learned about these scary thoughts is that, in fact, that's not true, and that they are anxiety-driven And mom's anxiety about these thoughts is often confirmation that because they're anxiety-driven, we know what they are, harm is not going to come to your baby. 91% research shows of new moms have these scary thoughts after they have a baby. Parents, not moms with depression or anxiety, just, quote, new moms have these scary thoughts. And so we wanted to normalize this for moms so that they can understand, wow, this doesn't feel so good and this is scary, but I'm not going crazy and it's okay. And when we do that, they disempower the thoughts and they start to feel better, they have less anxiety. So we wanted to give them a platform where they could put this out loud. And so we created this part of our website to say, this is what scary thoughts are. They're very common. If you're brave enough, share them with us anonymously, and we will just keep this ongoing list. And we started doing that. Moms were sharing their thoughts, and some of them were hard to see in print. They were hard for moms to put out there. Some of the moms said they've never uttered these words before, never written these words before, never shared it before. Once that took on life of its own, I teamed up with fabulous illustrator Molly McIntyre, and she and I created these comics where we illustrated these scary thoughts, not the scary thoughts that moms were submitting, but ones that I was giving to Molly, and she'd make these cartoons. So they took the internet by storm, and they're awesome because what they do is they turn these horrific thoughts into relatable characters and the hidden words that moms are not saying, like, hey, how are you doing? And the mom said on the street, and mom says, I'm good, I feel great. And in her thought bubble, she's saying, you know, I haven't slept, I haven't showered, I feel like hurting my baby, I don't know what's wrong with me, I think I'm going crazy. But we're not telling anybody that. And so comic after comic is demonstrating these private secret thoughts and words that mom's having, and women are really... they're really resonating for women, and they're appreciating it.
I looked at a lot of those on your website, and all this information is available at Line One on our website, the show page. We have links to postpartum depression websites and resources, and Karen's webpage, which these cartoons are fabulous, and they really do illustrate these internal things. And maybe that's the one thing, if anything, from this I'd like to get out, is these scary thoughts. You said 91%. That's a big number.
But
I don't know anybody that had a baby that has told me that they wanted to put their child in, you know, their baby in an oven, or mm-hmm. that they were afraid they were going to drop them on their head and kill them, or just sleep through it and crush them. I mean, mm-hmm. those are to normalize that, because so many people sit with that alone, right? That's what you're
mm-hmm.
saying.
Oh my goodness, they don't even tell their partners.
Right.
Because of, you know, there's also this sort of magical thinking with anxiety that if I say it out loud, I'm going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be more real, and if I keep it inside, I can just make this go away, make it go away, make it go away. And it doesn't, it makes it bigger. It makes it bigger. And so we want to encourage mom, you know, the taboo against mothers expressing negative feelings like this acts actually as a reinforcement for their silence. So, you know, they just don't believe it's going to be okay to say it out loud. And too many moms have said it out loud to the wrong person and ended up in the ER or in the police station, you know? So we do want, one of my books is Dropping the Baby, and Other Scary Thoughts.
Uh-huh.
And that book, pretty much, you know, there's a lot of research and information in that book that we encourage moms, certainly who are symptomatic, to just sort of slide over. But there's a lot of information in there with this, like how normal this is, it's okay, and here are some ways, some cognitive, you know, ways to live with these terrible thoughts and help them get smaller instead of bigger. Because when we hold them in, you know, the anxiety gets exacerbated. So talking about them and writing them down and letting somebody know if you find a safe place will actually go far to reduce the anxiety.
All right. It sounds like stigma and shame are what we're talking about. And we've got a caller, Francine, who's calling in about something related to that. Go ahead, Francine. You're on Line One with Karen.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for being on.
Hi,
I breastfed two boys. They're in their 30s now. They're doctor ordered clients or patients. The first boy, very easy, suckling, everything went well. The second baby, he just could not latch on, and I was, third day, I was extremely full, I was in pain. I couldn't pump, I couldn't get the milk out of one through pumping. He wasn't helping me with the other one, and I went into this little, like, crazy state of mind, and I was holding the baby in one hand and the pump in the other, and I said, I'm going to throw one of these two across the room, and I don't know which one it is. And it was this real moment where I really didn't know. I really had this thought in my mind that it could be the pump, it could be the baby, I don't know. Now, that left pretty quickly, and you know, I don't know what I did to get the milk flowing, but I did something. But a little, then a couple of days after that, I told someone who I thought was a very good friend, you know, this experience, and she said, "Oh, someone should have called child services on you."
Mm. Right,
and I was horrified.
Right.
I was just horrified by the judgmentalism, and then that leads to my larger point, which is I've done a lot of years of work with people with mental illnesses and their families and the stigma that's involved with that. And I taught myself and I taught others how easy it is to show your judgment towards people. You could do it with the look of your face, your mouth, certain words.
Right.
And so people, my feeling and my experience is that whether you're professionals or peer helpers or family members, we need to be taught how not to express judgmentalism, because it's not these moms' fault. Just like it wasn't these other folks' fault that they had mental illness, or the family members. It wasn't their fault. And doctors need the training. We just need to have a discussion about what judgmentalism is and how badly it hurts, because your guests may agree with me. I think that's the number one thing that causes people to be quiet are these implicit or subtle, sometimes explicit, message of judgment that they get, that
all right,
you should have done this,
mm-hmm,
you should have done that. So
mm-hmm,
my question is, what do we do to get that, because education is always the key with stigma. What do we do? I know you're already doing a lot, but what more can we do? Because it's not just a mother birthing problem. It's all over.
Well, there's a lot there, Francine.
Take the line off of-
Yeah, let me get Karen's answer, because I'm sure she has a lot to say. Those are great questions. Karen, you got a response?
Yeah. First of all, let me start by saying, you can see, you know, she had... Francine, you had these issues, you know, 30 years ago or so forth, and they're still such hot buttons. You can see how passionate these issues are for women and mothers. I want to start by responding with the devil's advocate position and just say, on behalf of healthcare providers who do judge, I do want to say that one of the reasons why this is so scary is that the stakes are so high if we miss something.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't judge sometimes and we miss it, babies can die, mothers can get hurt, you know? Are we overreacting? Are we underreacting? How do we know? Do we need to call Child Protective Services or not? Of course, we probably usually don't, but what if we did that one time and we missed it? And so because there's a baby's well-being at stake, healthcare providers, well-intended, well-educated healthcare providers, will often err on the side of overprotecting the baby, you know? And sometimes they make a mistake, and then now it's splashed all over the, you know, the headlines. But that's part of the problem, is we just don't know, and so we want to err on keeping babies safe. The other piece is that there are so many, Francine's completely right, there are so many opinions about how to do things and how not to do things, and there's more opinions now than ever, and they are conflictual, they are in your face, they are all over the place, and, you know, there's probably more stress now than, you know, I always say 34 years ago when I had my children, we just had our babies and we went to work or we stayed home and we just did it. Now everybody's showing you how you're supposed to look and how you're supposed to feel and how you're supposed to recover from your C-section and how you're supposed to breastfeed and not breastfeed or formula or, oh my God, don't give your baby formula. There's so many opinions that now my job is becoming trying to give moms permission to unplug, stop asking questions, except from, you know, with your doctor and your partner, and just cocoon yourself and take care of yourself, because it can be a hard place out there with all these opinions. So,
all right, let's go to Allison. You're on line one. You have some information on some resources.
Hi, Pendris. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Allison.
I was actually on with Pendris the last time you were on, Karen, a couple of years ago.
Oh, Allison Coons.
Yeah, hi.
I can hardly hear you, though, so bear with me.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's better.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So I was just calling because we do have an organization here in Alaska. We're based in Anchorage. We're the Postpartum Support International Alaska chapter.
Mm-hmm.
We just recently got our chapterhood, and I just wanted to let all of our listeners know that
Great.
We are a resource here in town. We have a Facebook page, and we have a resource list on there for providers. And we're also bringing up a provider training in about a year in April. So we're just getting the planning in.
That's awesome. And let me underline that, Postpartum Support International, which is postpartum.net. And what they have for other listeners outside of Alaska, they do have a support network for, you know, globally to you insert the area that you want help. And they have coordinators all over the world who can help connect moms with resources that are local to them. So thank you, Allison, for that. And for everything you're doing. That's awesome.
Yeah, we do have postpartum.net on our website. And Allison, is it well, what's the name of the Facebook page?
It's Postpartum Support International Alaska Chapter-Mothering Wellness now.
Okay, there's a couple others on my website too, but if you look around for local supports, I'm sure that stuff will come up. We have a bunch of information, so thanks for the call. There's a couple of events coming up, Allison. Do you know about those?
Yeah. So we're doing a showing of the Dark Side of the Full Moon documentary. That's mm-hmm. on May 18th. It's open to the public. It's at the BP Energy Center. And I think we're starting that at 6:30.
Okay.
On the Friday, May 18th. And then there'll be a panel discussion afterwards where people can ask questions. And then at the end of September, on September 29th, we're doing our fundraising and awareness walk. It's called Climb Out of the Darkness, and that's been going on for several years now. And that's a fundraiser for the Postpartum Support International Alaska chapter, so the funds stay in the state. They don't go to the national chapter. And then the provider training that we're bringing up is a two-day training, and that will also be at the BP Energy Center, and that's in April next year, April 4th and 5th.
Okay, so we're having some problems with your connection, but sounds like there's quite a few resources coming up, and just Google postpartum depression in Alaska, and you'll get all that stuff. It's important. Karen, can you tell us why it's important for people to get involved, educate themselves from, like, the time? I mean, shouldn't this be integrated into somebody's birth plan, essentially, like a constant checks or checking in, and really, because don't leave the burden to the patient to call this out is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. In fact, we're finding out that women respond really well to what you're calling integrated care, where especially OBGYNs who are starting to have mental health care providers as a part of their practice, so that it's sort of a one-stop shop, and it's very hard for moms to follow up once they're given the resources for some logistical obvious reasons. And if we can say down the hall we have Jane Smith, and she's a therapist who specializes in this, or even just knowing that somebody is there, again, if somebody's asking the right questions and telling me that there's a mental health person down the hall, I just know that I'm in the right place. So yes, but even before that, are they asking those questions when somebody's pregnant? Are they, are they getting a preliminary sense of what their risk factors are and what their support system looks like afterwards and so forth? Now, the question a lot of OBs have is this beyond their scope of practice? And again, they aren't trained to, psychiatric piece is not part of their practice. So they say baby is born, this belongs to somebody else, you know what I mean? And now pediatricians are getting on board, and they are getting very involved in the well-being of mom because, obviously, they're invested in the well-being of the baby. And so a lot of pediatricians who see moms more frequently are screening for postpartum depression and making sure that mom is okay.
The importance of everybody just getting into the habit, mental health professionals looking for that. Whenever I have a mom with a baby, it doesn't matter if it's 2 years old, I go back and ask those questions about what birth was like and things after the birth and really try to tease that out. And there's been several times where they've described all these symptoms of postpartum depression and anxiety, and nobody ever asked them about it. And I said, well, did anybody talk to you about mental health and postpartum? And they were like, well, I've heard of it, but not really. You know, I got a flyer once.
Right. That's a great, great point. Sometimes we'll talk about that when we talk to couples therapists, psychologists who do marriage counseling, and they're seeing, you know, a man and a woman or two women and two men, whatever, and they've been together, and they have a baby that's 2.5 months old. And it never crosses anybody's mind to ask the questions, those questions. And this is a mental health, you know, professional.
Yeah.
And they're dealing with the marriage without saying, wait a minute, let's go back a couple months and see what's happening here, you know?
All right. My guest today is a leading expert on maternal mental health, Karen Kleiman. Karen has authored and co-authored numerous books on the subject and is a regular speaker and trainer. After this short break, we will discuss Karen's position a little bit more about health and mental health professionals are inadequately trained in maternal mental health and what's being done to fix the problem. We'll also discuss what to do if you have a problem or somebody that you care about has a problem. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your co-host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guest is a leading expert on maternal mental health and perinatal mental health, Karen Kleiman. We're talking about health and wellness for mothers and how to look for signs and symptoms that there may be something wrong. If you have a question or a comment for Karen, our local phone number is 550-8433. You have to call in the next 8 or 9 minutes or so as we're coming up on the hour. You can also reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, and you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, Karen, so as hard as it is for women to talk about this. It's not limited to women. Men experienced perinatal mental health problems. Is that the right term for men? Postpartum problems. It's not something that men are really that comfortable talking about either, is it?
Right. So there's been a lot more of attention to that. We're finding out that statistically it's almost, you know, it's almost as many men, 10%, the numbers are of men who are experiencing a clinical depression after the birth of their baby. And so it's really not surprising when you think about it, aside from the specific hormones, everything else is pretty much, you know, the strain on the marriage and the lifestyle and the finances and the sleep deprivation and so forth. And there's some recent research that was very interesting. I forget who it was, Saxby, I think, just last year on the hormonal component with men and the testosterone, that men who were depressed after childbirth were found to have lower testosterone, and yet, interestingly enough, the upside to that was that their marriages were perceived as happier. So they were more at risk for depression with lower testosterone levels, but they were at better position to have a satisfactory relationship. And it's just sort of the, showing you that the beginning of the research is taking a look at male role in this, and for a long time we've sort of neglected that. So right now we're research and are starting to pay attention that postpartum and pregnancy issues really do affect both partners more than we ever knew until recently.
We talked about some of the risk factors that could put somebody, well, at risk for developing some postpartum issues. What about the protective factors? I mean, we're talking about ideal situations, and obviously there's many different situations which can cause great challenges, but what are the protective factors that lend to like good outcomes for this stuff?
Well, one of the things that we like to tell our moms who come to see us is if they've had a previous postpartum depression that we know puts them at risk, we also tell them the advantages that they're coming to see us and that we're watching them and that they have the experience of a previous depression and that they recovered from. So we have a good idea of what it may look like and how it responds to treatment, and so we've got all eyes on it. So one of the best things that she can do is to connect with somebody who specializes in this so that she doesn't have to go through this by herself, and so they can keep an eye on the progress of things. And we want to monitor her and protect her by making sure she's sleeping, making sure she's eating, making sure she's fortifying herself, making sure she's not isolating, making sure that we know and that we respond quickly, because early intervention will augment recovery. So the longer she feels bad, the harder it is to treat her. So we want to make sure that they're informed and that make sure that, you know, both partners let somebody know if they're worried about how they're feeling. And I'll be honest with you, Preston, it's one of my sound bites that I repeat over and over again is I really trust a mother's instincts when it comes to this. It's the most important marker that I have. If a woman tells me she doesn't like the way she's feeling, we need to take that very, very seriously. And I think to answer what you're going to ask next, can I just preempt you here?
Sure.
Is I think that's one of the biggest flaws, is that in an effort to normalize this, healthcare providers will often poo-poo this and dismiss it. Oh, it's fine. You just had a baby. You'll be fine. Go take a walk. You know, go have a glass of wine. Just relax. You'll be fine. But what that does is it patronizes her. It dismisses her concerns. It may feel better immediately, you know, like, oh, there's nothing wrong. I just told him I didn't feel good, and the doctor said I was fine. So at first it feels good, and then 20 minutes later, that doctor has no idea how bad I'm feeling. So if a mom says something's not right, I say she's right. Something's not right. That doesn't mean something terrible is happening. It doesn't mean she's going crazy. It doesn't mean she has to be scared by it. But it means somebody needs to listen to her and take her seriously and ask her the right questions. What are the thoughts she's having? What's scaring her? Has she ever felt this way before? Is she having thoughts of hurting herself?
I mean, it seems like well-intentioned to say, oh, yeah, like, well, of course you feel that way. You've just had a baby and you don't have enough sleep. And I mean, that seems well-intentioned, but what you're not digging enough to find out what it is. And then they think, wow, I guess I just have to endure this and I can't talk more about it. Is that the problem with that?
That's exactly right. We actually have a comic that illustrates this completely. She says to the doctor, yeah, I'm really anxious and I don't know if this is okay or not, but I'm feeling really, I'm worried all the time. And and the doctor says, oh, that's very common. Don't worry about it. You just had a baby. You'll be fine. You know, and then in her thought bubble, she says something like, oh, my God, you know, phew, that's good. Oh, wait a minute. She probably doesn't have any idea how bad I'm feeling. She doesn't know that I'm thinking of dropping my baby down the steps on purpose, seeing this horrible, you know. And she goes on and on and on about the stuff that she's not telling the doctor, so it's not the doctor's fault, right? But at the same time, she said, I'm anxious, and the doctor said, that's normal. She goes out the door. So current thinking is two things. Number one, mention postpartum depression and anxiety by name.
Often.
You know, this often. This is a real thing. Put it out there. Name it with the patient. Tell her and give her resources right there, right then, even if you think she's fine. Even if she looks really healthy, even if she didn't say she's really scared about the way she's feeling, talk about postpartum depression by name, give her resources.
Talking about scary thoughts, seems like that would be such a relief for a mom who's thinking about hurting her baby and not being able to say, thinking, I don't love my baby, I'm not attached to it. But relieving that, as you're not the only one who does that, that is quite common, would seem like such a relief and so freeing.
Right. And that's sort of that's why the Speak the Secret campaign feels so good. You know, it feels a little stinky to say that out loud, but it feels so good because so many moms have come forward to us, emailed us, you know, Instagram and you know, social media and so forth are just saying thank you, thank you, thank you, because I thought I was the only one, and now I'm reading all, and it's hard to read these if you looked at it, Preston. You know, there are some really, really scary, horrific things being spoken about and written, but to see it and to have moms give us this feedback that they had no safe place to say it, and yes, they do feel better after they say it. They do.
Well, you told me you were going to call me by my wrong name on the air because I spelled your name wrong a bunch of times.
Pepperwinkle.
Well, you're calling me Preston, which is, yeah.
It's, oh, I did?
Yeah.
Oh, Preston. Well, I like that better.
It's Prentice. Yeah, yeah.
Preston.
No, I know you know my name, but I just thought that was funny. So the Speak the Secret campaign, what was that? You mentioned a high profile case where, can you give us that story real briefly about the woman who was hospitalized or against her will?
At the end of this, you're gonna make me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Well, I don't wanna misrepresent the facts because I did not talk to her and I did not treat her, but I know that she was
bullet points. Yeah.
She was very well informed and she you know, was very scared about the way she was feeling, and she was very authentic about telling her healthcare provider that she was having, I forget the word she used, but horrific, terrible, scary thoughts. And they went out and basically called the police and escorted her and her baby to the ER, who then promptly dismissed her because she wasn't depressed or anxious. She was just having these scary thoughts, which I'm not saying weren't horrible, but she was terrified that her baby was going to be taken away, and nobody sat with her. They basically, you know, abandoned her, called the cops, who took it from there, and it's just very humiliating for a new mother with her new baby to be in her healthcare provider's arms, and they don't know, you know, this symptom that is actually not even a symptom always. Sometimes it's just a part of being a new mother, and it doesn't always, is not always indication of a mental health issue. It's some normal anxiety that accompanies childbirth. So doctors should know this. You know, we go all the way back to medical school. Are they teaching the right things, you know?
Yeah.
Do the young doctors know? The older doctors don't know. So we need to get into the educational institutions and make sure that they have the right information.
This should be a routine. I mean, it's such a huge issue, and it's so vital for the child, for the relationship, for the mother's health. It encompasses the whole system, and so it seems like it should be common core kind of medical training, as most mental health issues should be.
It does seem, for those of us who know this, it does seem fairly straightforward, you know, why we're not, incorporating this. I'm not sure I can answer that. Yet it doesn't seem like it is.
Okay, so how should somebody have handled that situation? If you have that same situation, mother comes to you, and are people worried about postpartum psychosis when they call police, and how should they respond,
right,
if somebody brings that up?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and that's why many of us are sort of forced to play the devil's advocate position and say, well, wait a minute, this doesn't mean the healthcare provider was, you know, was just a bad guy here. Maybe they were scared and they wanted to make sure keep everybody safe and so forth. What was missing there that we can't really go into here is sort of the nature of my most recent book called The Art of Holding.
Right.
And holding in therapeutic terms is sort of a reference to skill building techniques to help contain the incredible amount of agitation and distress in the vulnerable new mother. So how do we sit with that level of distress? Well, we don't just leave her in an office room by herself and go call the cops. So even if the cops needed to be called, I have no idea. But
right.
Nobody sat with her. Nobody talked to her. Nobody assessed this. No, you know, as far as I know, again, that's why I'm saying I don't want to misrepresent the facts. But I don't know that anybody sat with her and got a sense of, is this anxiety we're talking about? And did we talk about postpartum depression and anxiety with her? Or maybe, you know, can we assess? There are screenings for anxiety. There's screenings for depression. There's screenings for psychosis. She was just sort of abandoned in the midst of all this, and it just raised some questions that we all had that we're just not taking good care of our moms. We're just not taking good care of our moms in our culture. We just expect them to go, you know, have a baby, go home and take care of it. And when they come to us and say they're scared or they're hurt or they're suffering, we still don't take good care of them.
Yeah, and that's not on purpose, but it does sound like protective things can be harming. And so I like the idea and the concept of creating a container. I guess we as professionals as family members with folks who are struggling with this need to be comfortable being uncomfortable with their pain, right? I mean, much of that.
That's another whole issue. You know, there's a lot being written on the well-being and the mental health of our healthcare providers.
Yes.
Right? And if they're not comfortable asking these questions, if they're not comfortable, if they're not well, if their own mental health is compromised in some way, or they, you know, and they feel that they're not equipped to deal with this, then nobody's needs are being met. So you're raising some very important questions.
It sounds like intervention is perhaps a prevention and intervention would be another conversation. You have about 30 seconds to leave us with some kind of final thoughts.
Final thoughts are families are getting more educated. We are doing our best little by little to educate the healthcare providers. The best word to moms and partners who are suffering is to be your own best advocate and get the information that you need, and do not stop until you feel heard. If your healthcare provider does not feel, if you do not feel listened to, then say it again and say it differently. And if you feel dismissed or patronized, then find another healthcare provider. There is a great deal at stake.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Karen, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Prentice.
All right, please remember to check out the links and information we have available about today's topic on our show page. If you missed part of today's conversation, you can catch the rebroadcast of Line One on our either on podcast or in our library of archive shows. Next week, Dr. Woodard will host a conversation about how climate change in Alaska might impact our health. That's next Monday, April 30th at 2, repeating at 8 on Line One, Your Health Connection. Eric Bork handled the web editing for today's program. Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to join us. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.